The only certain barrier to truth is the belief that you already have it. And this week's opening quote comes from Voltaire. Welcome to Surviving the Matrix, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Maxwell Egan. It's a pleasure to be with you once again, and I will be your host for the next hour. What if everything we ever thought to be true turned out to be a lie? And what if this world and everything we think about reality turned out to be very different to what we believe it to be? It's a question that I find quite interesting, and it's a question that very much upsets a lot of people. It's a question that I asked last week, and, well, I certainly seem to have ruffled a few feathers with last week's radio show, ladies and gentlemen. I guess that's what happens when you think just that little bit too far outside the box for some people. Very interesting, the responses that you get. I find it fascinating how polarized the responses are. It's either the greatest thing people have ever seen or the biggest pile of rubbish they've ever listened to. Quite interesting how people tend to be so polarized in the way they approach things. But as I've said before, each show that I come on and do here is simply a random thought flow. I simply go wherever my thoughts are leading me, and I vocalize it as I'm doing it, and I invite you along to share the journey. And bear in mind, folks, that none of the scenarios that I put forth on last week's show are things that I'm saying are true. They're simply things that I'm suggesting are possible. Just pulling at threads, going where the evidence leads me, and keeping an open mind about everything and asking questions really is the key to the whole thing. And really, when you listen to the shows, listen to these radio shows, I actually make very few statements on these radio shows. I mean, I just made one then, but when you really take the statements that I make in context and put them in the larger dialogue, you find that what I really spend my time doing on these radio shows is asking questions and encouraging other people to ask questions as well. It's just the approach that I have. You know, and I'm not afraid to ask the weird questions as well. I'm not afraid to think outside the box and to ask some very strange things sometimes. Well, things that may appear strange to the listener anyway. But that's just the way I prefer to approach things. I mean, you never teach anybody anything by attempting to convince them of the truth in what you believe you know to be true. You teach them by encouraging them to ask the questions and think for themselves in the first place. And that's very much what I attempt to do with these shows. Just look at the situation that we're in and not be afraid to ask the so-called weird questions. And just look at things objectively and keep an open mind in what you're researching. Because when all is said and done, folks, we don't really know what's going on because we simply don't have access to the right information. We've had so much information changed and stolen and taken from us, and history is very, very different to what we've been led to believe. And I have no qualms in saying that simply because I've travelled so much and I've looked at so many things, and nothing can be explained by the academic version of history. So it's really important that people remain objective when looking at all this, and remember, always bear in mind and always keep in focus that all you really know is that which exists within living memory. All the rest of it comes from books, and we have no way of confirming the authenticity of any of these books. So you really have to look at the evidence, the physical evidence, and you have to be prepared to keep an open mind. And I know it may be a very confronting thought for people to have to consider that maybe the books are wrong, maybe they've been lied to, but again, all I'm asking is that you look at the physical evidence and keep an open mind. And really, I think that is the most important thing anybody can do in any of this. Realize that if this truly is a quest for truth and a quest for freedom, then you need to be careful what you believe along the way. And you need to maintain an open mind and always look at things objectively and be open to everything. You've got to be prepared to consider everything, but believe nothing. Belief is the enemy of knowledge, and if you adopt a belief system, it's going to affect all the information that comes after that point. You're going to bring it all into your belief system, and you're going to judge it accordingly, rather than being open-minded and letting the threads lead you where they may. I mean, I'm absolutely open to everything, folks, any possibility. I certainly don't believe anything that I'm told by academia, not anymore. I mean, I've lived too long to believe what I was taught in school. I've lived too long to believe what I read in history books simply because of the stuff that I've seen when I've travelled around the world. And new discoveries are made all the time, and many of these discoveries just don't make the academic world. They don't want to change the textbooks, it would seem. Things like petrification. You know, fossils that we find around the place, these are all presumed to be millions of years old. And yet there's new evidence that fossils are actually formed quite quickly. There was a recent discovery I read somewhere. I'll see if I can dig up the information and get back to you later. But I read somewhere, you might find it yourself if you do a search, that there was a foot or a shoe print that had been found in a rock, and the manufacturer recognized the shoe print. So now that, as I said, I'm a little bit vague on it, but I'll try to get the information for you. But the thing is that there was this fossilized shoe print, and the shoe was actually made in 1929. And there it was, a fossilized print of this shoe. So fossils can be formed very quickly. And yet still, when we go to science sites or archaeological websites, they'll tell you fossils take millions of years to form. And such is simply not the case. So new information is being discovered and uncovered all the time. And this is certainly the case in regard to our history, ladies and gentlemen. In regard to our history, in regard to monuments and relics and just stuff from the past lying all over the earth, new things are being uncovered all the time, and they're serving to build quite a compelling image of our past. As I've been alluding to, what it's all been leading towards is the fact that there was this worldwide civilization that existed not too long ago. Very interestingly, I just got a link someone sent me the other day of an investigation into the Basda Cave system. And if you're watching this on YouTube, I will be sure to put a link in the description below. Basda Caves are within modern-day Turkey, and it's an enormous cave system, and a lot of people said it was a natural formation for a lot of years, but it's not. It has tool marks in the caves that indicate that it was made by man, and not only that, but the tool marks are also the same as tool marks that have been found all over the world in other places. When you look at this research this person has done, you tie it in with the research that Sylvie Evanova has done on the New Earth Channel. Tie it in with all the research that we've been doing lately, all the stuff that's been uncovered about the ancient past, and you begin to see, here is another sign. Here is another piece of evidence, a conclusive piece of evidence that says, yes, there was a worldwide civilization that existed on this earth. And all we're attempting to do really is trying to figure out when that actually was. And it's very likely that it was a civilization that started many thousands of years ago, but we're also led to believe that it collapsed and fell into decline many thousands of years ago, and the evidence would suggest that such is not the case, that it didn't fall into decline until perhaps 800 to 1,000 years ago, and it didn't actually disappear completely until as recently as 200 years ago. And even parts of this civilization are still in existence now and are being wiped out by the modern war machine. You know, all the ancient structures in Aleppo and the structures that are being destroyed throughout Yemen now. A lot of people don't realize how beautiful Yemen actually is. Some of the architecture and some of the buildings are actually quite wonderful. One might question whether this architecture in Yemen is Tartarian in nature. In fact, one might question if that is not where all of this architecture that we're seeing around the world comes from. And as I keep saying, folks, it's becoming very, very apparent that history is very much different to what we've been led to believe. And again, this is what got me started on this journey back when I was 8 years old. I was very interested in history, and it's what got me onto this whole conspiratorial rabbit hole that I've been on my whole life. You know, you start looking into ancient history, and you start realizing that it's wrong. Everything they tell us is wrong. There's monuments and artifacts lying everywhere which tell a completely different story. And it can't be that they simply missed these things. I mean, there's so many of them. And once you discover how many of them there actually are, it becomes apparent that this isn't just someone not getting the right idea and missing the artifacts. It's a deliberate cover-up. And the thing is, the cover-up goes so deep. The question is, how deep does it really go? And it's those sort of questions that get you in all sorts of trouble when you start investigating these things and start attempting to figure out just how deep the lie is. Now, recently I got quite a bit of flack for daring to suggest that there may not even have been a Roman Empire. And I made that statement based on the work of Anatoly Fomenko, because when you look at the research that Fomenko did into the king lists, the lists of Caesars and all that sort of stuff through the Roman Empire, you'll find that you've got the same story just repeated over and over again. And it's really quite telling, and it really looks as though they simply made the whole thing up. And looking at all of this and considering the concept of Tartaria, this ancient civilization that once existed in Northern Europe, where did that come from? Who were the Tartarians? Were they the remnants of what happened when Atlantis fell? And there is very strong evidence that Atlantis did exist. Now, the Rickart that we've found in Northern Africa very much looks like Atlantis. And a lot of people may question that as well. But I don't know. For my money, it looks like Atlantis. It's got everything we need, everything you would expect to find at the site of Atlantis. It's in the correct location where Plato put it. It's the correct shape. It's the correct size. It has all of the correct geological features surrounding it. So I'm going to kind of go with that and assume that that very likely is Atlantis. And if that is the case, then what we're looking at with all this Greco-Roman architecture around the world very likely came from there. And of course, that is something that mainstream academia would be loath to admit. And wouldn't that be a major rewriting of the history books to have to point out the fact that all of this Greco-Roman style architecture actually very likely came from Africa, not from Greek and Rome at all. And they constructed the Roman Empire simply to account for the fact that all of this architecture was all around the world, and to provide the backstory needed to push this architecture way back to like 1,000 years in the past, when really it was actually all built quite recently. The stories of the Roman Empire that are presented to us also very much provide the backstory needed to justify the existence of government in its current form. And also the evidence that I discussed recently of ancient technology, free energy devices, the fact that it seems that free energy was very readily available a few short years ago, well, at least a couple of centuries ago anyway. And I don't know about you, but I find all of this stuff incredibly interesting and intriguing, looking into the concept of ancient technology, and technology that's very different from the technology we use now, such as sound frequency technology. I've seen a lot of reports recently talking about the organs, the old pipe organs, and what these were really used for, whether they are in fact instruments that were used to create sound frequency that was used for healing. And this may sound preposterous to a lot of people, but these pipe organs in these cities and these small towns, it seems like every town has one as well. I've even got reports from little villages in Mexico that don't have very much there. They've got dirt roads and all sorts of stuff, but there'll be a church in the town which has a huge pipe organ. They don't really know where it came from, but it's there. And the question is, what was the real purpose of these instruments? Were they merely for creating music, or was it really a sound healing system that they had? And I'm reminded of things such as Royal Rife. He's someone that I've mentioned on the show many times in the past. Royal Raymond Rife was a man who found a way to cure all diseases way back in the 20s or 30s. I think it was in the 1930s or the 1940s, they actually had a banquet to celebrate the end of all disease due to the research and techniques that had been uncovered by Royal Raymond Rife, and he was curing incurable diseases, and he did it through sound frequency. He was able to identify viruses, live viruses in the body. He could view them with this microscope that he built. The Rife microscope was an absolutely incredible device which gave him the ability to be able to view viruses in real time. And what he would do, he would put a blood sample under the microscope, and he would look at your blood sample, and he would subject the sample to a series of light frequencies. Because every light you apply, when you go through frequencies of light and you put them on an object, different frequencies of light will illuminate different aspects of the object. Like if you put frequencies of light on a blood slide, different organisms or viruses or bacteria in the blood will become illuminated under certain lights. And Rife figured out that all you have to do is go through the light frequency until you find the light that illuminates the virus, and then find the corresponding sound frequency, bombard the virus with that sound frequency, and it will shatter like a crystal glass shatters on high C. When an opera singer hits high C, they can shatter a crystal glass. It's the same thing. It's the same principle. All you have to do is find the corresponding sound frequency, and you will create a feedback loop which will shatter the virus. And that's what Royal Rife figured out. So when you look at that, and you think of these organs and the sound that they produce and the healing that comes from sound, I mean, any people who've gone to sound healings know what I'm talking about. And sound healings may sound incredibly new age and airy-fairy to most peoples, but they do, in fact, work. So it's another very interesting thing to look at. And again, I find all of this sort of stuff quite intriguing and quite fascinating. And the concept that we had this ancient technology is really not so far-fetched. And when you think about it and you really consider the possibility that this technology has been stolen from us, it really does provide a whole new perspective to look at things from. And you think about these huge pipe organs in these churches, folks. Who built these things? I mean, these things are amazing, the construction of them. Some of them are absolutely huge. Who figured out the frequencies and who got it all that perfect? Who tuned it? And imagine the sound field that it would set up if you went through the entire keyboard and you created that level of sound. I mean, these things are incredibly loud. You could literally cover the entire village in a sound frequency. What if people went to these church buildings and actually sat in the organ music and the organ music healed them of all of the bacteria in their body every week when they went to these churches? Perhaps the churches were not places of worship. Perhaps they were places of healing. Just a thought. And again, it may be a preposterous thought for a lot of people, but again, look at the detail of these organs. Look at the detail that went into the construction of them, the meticulous workmanship of them. Look at the detail that went into the construction of a lot of these buildings. Like I said last week, and like I've said quite often recently, a lot of these buildings look more like machines than actual buildings. They look like they're buildings that actually perform a function, which isn't just an aesthetic function of looking good or being a place to pray in. They very much look like they are able to accumulate and harness and use energy in a way that we are unaware of. And when you begin to consider these type of things, even if you don't want to believe them, just considering them, it does open up a whole new train of thought for people. And if you can really consider this type of technology being a reality, then look at the type of technology we use now. Look at the 5G system. Look at all of this digital stuff that we're doing, which is so different to this analog technology that we were using. Anybody who knows the human vessel and understands humanity understands the difference between analog and digital and how it affects us on an emotional and on an energetic level. I mean, it does. I mean, we're very much analog in everything we do, and even that is not the probably correct way to say it, but the whole digital realm that we're being led into now, it's completely the opposite of any of this ancient type of technology we're using. Even the explosive type of electricity that we create through burning coal and all the things that we do to create electricity, if there was a way to simply do it through harmonizing with the ether around us, it would seem to be far more beneficial. I mean, just think about it, folks. You know, we're made of energy. The static electricity that is around everywhere is part of us. It's part of everything. If you're a kid, you probably had a crystal set when you were a kid, a crystal radio set. I had one when I was a child. You just combine these crystals and they harvest energy from the field and bang, you've got electricity, you've got a radio. So why do you need to have these big coal fire power stations? You know, if you had crystals and copper and metal and wires and put it in the right configuration, why would you not be able to harvest energy from the field? I mean, if you can do it with a crystal radio set, why can't you do it with a huge building and create an energy field which is going to work for everybody? Makes sense to me. It's just that a lot of people aren't prepared to think that way. You know, they see their crystal radio sets they had as a kid as something novel, but apply it on a bigger scale. Look at what you use to make that crystal radio set. You use crystals. You use copper wire. You use all the things that we find in these buildings. When you consider that, and you consider people such as Nikola Tesla, whether Tesla was even real, which is something else I'm even beginning to question now, whether he was just put there, maybe he was a real character, but maybe all the stuff that he did was simply attributed to him to create a cover story to hide the fact that all this technology exists. I mean, I don't know. It's just a thought. But whether he existed or not, you think of what it was all about. It was about harvesting energy from the field. It was about essentially the same technology that we're seeing in a crystal radio set. So would it not make sense to create a character such as Tesla simply to cause people to not look too deeper into how their crystal radio set actually worked? You know, you never know. I mean, Tesla may have been a real character. He may have done all those real things, or he just may have been a construct. The way they used William Shakespeare to cover up all the work that was very likely done by the Bacon Society. And when you consider the concept that I was talking about earlier about the fabrication of the Roman Empire and the story of Julius Caesar, it's very likely that most of this was simply a Shakespearean creation and was itself created by the Bacon Society. I mean, who knows? But it's certainly a possibility and so something that is worth considering. But where does it all lead, all of this type of discussion? That's the question, isn't it? I mean, with the rollout of 5G and all of the stuff that's happening, Some people may ask, what is the point of looking down these rabbit holes and discussing what may have happened in the past? Well, the point is that this past is so recent. It's not thousands of years ago. It's just hundreds of years ago. And I've tried so many ways of awakening people. I've pointed out the clear and present danger that we're in. I've pointed out the state of urgency that we're in. I've addressed 9/11. I've addressed the state of Israel. I've addressed the war on terror. I've addressed every single thing I can think of to attempt to awaken people and to empower people. And the concept that we had free energy as little as 150 to 200 years ago and we lived in a completely different society, I find incredibly empowering. You know, and if people can grasp this concept and see how recently it really was, that we were very likely in much freer societies than we are now, it may inspire them to want to get back to that. You know, we've got remnants of this culture still here all over the earth, these big copper-top buildings, these big churches, these spires, all these things that we can't build now. You know, even the pipe organs that I was talking about before, I mean, you go and find someone who can go and build one of these pipe organs for you. See if you can find someone. See if you can find a church that's even using one of these pipe organs now. Now, most churches, they may have a pipe organ in there, but it's rarely used. And if it is used, it's just used to play hymns. You think they would really go to all the trouble of constructing an organ of this size and shape and magnitude of some of the ones that you see in these old churches and just use them for playing tunes behind hymns on Sundays? Do you really think they would go to all that effort just to do that? It seems pretty incongruous to me. But I don't know, I find all of this type of information really empowering. Perhaps it will inspire people to actually shake the sleep from their eyes, because that's really what it's like. It's like people are walking around in a daze. All of this technology exists all around them. All of this old world, a lot of the old world, still exists all around them, but they're simply not seeing it because they can't see outside of the social construct that they have in their minds. They can't see beyond the history that they've been told, the history they've been taught, the world that they've been indoctrinated into believing is real. But it's there, folks. All of this technology is there, and all of the evidence to support the fact that there was this worldwide culture is there. It's all right in front of everybody's face, hidden in plain sight, as they say. You know, we just build stuff around it and we make it blend in with the new stuff and it looks like it kind of belongs there, but it was just built by those guys back in the past who did things so great and did things so wonderfully. And we always do this. We admire the skills of the past, and yet at the same time we're told that we're living in a society which is progressing and we're doing things much better now than what we used to do. But have a look at some of this stuff from the past. We don't construct anything anywhere near, anything like, anything that even comes close to some of the structures that they built back then. So if we're in a society that's progressing forward and getting more and more skilled and more advanced as we go, how come everything is degrading so badly around us? All of our constructs are degrading. Everything we build is substandard, and it gets more and more substandard as we go along. Why is that? And of course, you could look at that and say, well, it's the result of the economic model. It's the result of scarcity. It's the result of needing to maximize profits and minimize expense in creating the products. And so it's all due to the corporate system. But really, when you even look at that, it means that the corporate system is designed to remove people of their life skills and designed to cheapen everything and create a throwaway society so that society itself can be eventually thrown away. How is this progress? How is this anything that is benefiting humankind? That's the thing. You know, a lot of people, when they look at society, they just view it economically. They don't view it from a human perspective. But our society should be there to support life. That should be first and foremost the absolute mandate of anything that we construct to have people living in. Any cities should be designed to support life. We don't need cities that are designed the way they are, that are designed to run economically and that are based on profit. Medical systems that are based on profit, energy systems that are based on profit, everything is based on profit. You know, it's this introduction of money and thus scarcity over the human experience which creates all of this substandard culture that we've got, all these substandard products. It removes us of everything that it means to be human by imposing this economic model over people. That's what it's been for. That's what it's been designed to do. And that's why we can never escape this system until we put all of that thinking down. You know, it doesn't matter what Trump's going to do. It doesn't matter what any president or any politician is going to do. If people still think economically, if people still think that this society is normal, that it should function this way, that we need to do the things that we're doing, then there's no hope for us. You know, if we're going to continue to support these cities that we live in, which are designed to separate people and to make them completely dependent upon the system. You know, you can't grow your own food. You can't ever survive on your own in a city. It's a jungle, and it's designed to be that way, both physically and mentally. Everything about the cities is jungle mentality, survival of the fittest. Only the things that you need for you to survive are not there, unless you can exploit someone else and get the paper you need to pay to be alive to go and buy these things from some establishment. There's nothing there in your environment that you can actually use to create a life for yourself. It's all economically based. It's simply not the natural habitat of humans. Humans shouldn't be living in these cities. They don't service in any way, shape, or form. And if you look at the way cities were constructed back in the past cultures, they very much seem to be designed in a way that would serve the people and that would benefit the people, even possibly heal the people, as we've just been previously discussing. Now you look at all this stuff and you see just what we had and just what we are capable of doing. And I don't know, I find it incredibly empowering to think about this. And I find it inspiring, I find it healing. Even the last week's show when I spoke about the foundlings and the foundling trains and all that sort of stuff, thinking about that and talking about that, I could feel the pain of the children and I found it healing. I found it cleansing. Just to bring that information to light, I found it good for the soul to discuss it, to acknowledge it. I felt in some way that I was bringing some freedom to the souls of those children. Maybe that's just me. Maybe I'm just a little bit out there, but I think it's empowering to look at this information. I think it's inspiring. And I think this type of information may be something that will wake people up. So that's why I've been pursuing this line of thought a little bit lately. But anyway, we have reached break time here, folks, so I better leave it there and we'll go and have a break. Thank you for joining me on the air today. It's always a pleasure to have your company. I'll be back to speak to you again in a few minutes. And welcome back to the show, folks. Now, as I've said many times before on this radio show, even looking at all this information and all of the stuff that we've got coming to us, ultimately what we're facing here is a spiritual battle. That's why they do everything they do to us to keep us down. That's why there's so much negative stuff around. That's why they stage all of these wars, manufacture all of these wars. That's why they stage all of these shootings everywhere, folks. And most of these shootings are fake. Most of these shootings don't have any victims. I mean, I'm sure there's some that people die. I don't even bother analyzing them anymore. I don't. I just look at the way it's been played. I don't even consider whether there were victims or whether there were shooters or whether it was staged or whether there were crisis actors. I'm just not interested in how they did it. It's the fact that the event happened and the fact of how it's going to be used, how it's going to be played, what is going to be the result of this event. And to be honest, there's plenty of other people out there now who are analysing these events and going through all the finer details. I don't need to do it. I just take it as a given that they're all staged. Whether they were victims or not, I don't know. Like I said, I don't even bother going into it anymore. It doesn't interest me. It's like so many people who spend so much time and effort, wasting so much time and effort arguing over the finer details of 9/11, whether it was thermite, whether it was directed energy weapons, who did it, whether it was this, whether it was that. It doesn't matter, folks. The fact is that the event happened and how the event was used. What is the result of the event? Look at the bigger picture. That's why I'm just not interested in arguing over the details of all of these things. Simply because when all is said and done, I mean, I can have an opinion, but ultimately I don't know because I wasn't there. These finer details don't even interest me. I think it's a rabbit hole. It's a red herring. You've got to look at the bigger picture and see how it's all being used. And what it's all about is suppressing the human experience. What it's all about is preventing people from really being able to be themselves, putting people in fear, putting society against each other. That's a great thing that happens with these shooting events as well. You get people arguing over whether there were victims or no victims. And these are people that are supposed to be dealing with the system, dealing with the government system, and yet they're arguing over details and distrusting people and distrusting each other over different people having different opinions of the details, none of which any of them actually know anyway. And that's why it's all done this way, folks, and it's all about divide and conquer. I see a lot of this in the truth movement as well. I see people who make their whole channels designed on analyzing what other people say so they can microanalyze each sentence and throw it back at them and create distrust. And we really need to put all of this stuff down and realize that we are in a state of clear and present danger, and the reality is that we've been lied to on all counts, so we can sit there and argue about the details till the cows come home, and it's not going to make any difference. We're still heading towards this same lockdown, this same police state, if we don't deal with this system. Face the reality around us, unite with each other, respect each other, allow people to disagree, allow people to think differently, and turn and face the system. And the way you turn and face the system, folks, is simply by withdrawing support from it. Start building strong ties in your community and helping people around you. Start putting in community gardens and start asking why. Start asking questions. When government and politicians ask you to do things, ask them why. That would be a great start. You know, all of the information that I've brought you on recent shows when I've been delving into history and, I mean, the stuff that I've brought you previous to that on 5G, the stuff that I brought you previously to that when I was talking about spirituality and consciousness for so many years. You know, when you combine all of this together, folks, I mean, what if we did combine all of this knowledge together and apply it to the reality that we live in? I mean, really, if we were to do that, we could change the world very, very quickly. You know, what if we were to question authority? What if we were to really discover the power that exists within ourselves? What if we were to see the futility and the stupidity of indulging in these parasitic social systems that we're now indulging ourselves in? And that's the thing. I mean, I think many people are seeing the stupidity of these systems. They're looking around them and saying, my God, what am I swimming in? But then they don't really know what to do about it. And it's really a very sad and pitiful state we find the human race in. Like I said, it's like people are in a trance and they wake up from their trance and they realize that they're living in this false reality. And it becomes very uncomfortable for them. A lot of people don't know what to do about it and they can't see the way out. And that's something that really does disturb me, even with bringing these radio shows to people. Sometimes I wonder whether it's a good idea to be waking people up to their surroundings because of the reaction it may have in them. It's like Neo in the Matrix when they say that there are certain people past a certain age, we don't wake these people up because they simply can't handle the truth. And sometimes I wonder about that. But again, with these radio shows, what I do is simply follow the thought processes that I'm having. You know, I'm not making claims and I'm not making statements. I'm often speculating. I'm giving you my opinion. I'm giving you my perspective on the information that I've had. And some of the information may seem quite strange and esoteric to people. It may seem like I'm going off on tangents that are irrelevant. I've had a lot of criticism over the last show for even talking about the mud flood, even considering the mud flood to be a possibility. And frankly, folks, all I'm doing is looking at physical evidence. I suggested that the mud flood may have happened around about 1840. I'm just simply looking at physical evidence. It may have been before that. It may have been around the 1600s. A lot of people think it may have been around then. But I'm just looking at it and thinking, well, this is a possibility. And if you can factor in the possibility of this happening, well, it does actually fit with other things. I mean, you can't just ignore it and say, oh, that's an impossibility, because if it was real, then it would be in history books, it would be in textbooks, it would be in the strata, it would be here. No, folks, you don't know that at all. You don't know whether it would have been in the history books at all, especially if you look at the information that I brought you last week on the foundling trains and the orphan trains, how most of society had children brought out to them. And we didn't have major communication, we didn't have the internet, we didn't even have newspapers in a lot of places back then. So how would anyone really know what was going on? People are just going to know what they're told. People are just going to know the history that they're given. And if people are brought to a strange country when they're a child and they grow up there, they're just going to believe whatever they're fed to explain how they got there to them. Not really going to know what history is, so it isn't so far-fetched when you think about this, and the information about the foundling trains and the orphan trains is very, very compelling and very important information, and it is a huge piece of the puzzle. Another video that I found, another channel that I found, because another question that I asked last week was, the slave trade. I was questioning the slave trade and the reality of the slave trade about what really happened during the slave trade. And that led me to another channel and information that was put together by a black man by the name of Dane Calloway, who is also questioning the slave trade. And he's done some remarkable videos on the history of the slave trade in the United States. And he's gone back down the food chain and gone back down the line, and he's realized that a lot of the so-called African Americans in the United States are not African at all. They're actually Native Americans, because the slave trade did not happen the way we were told that it happened. And gee, surprise, surprise, something isn't the way we're told. I mean, why would we expect any different, folks? Because nothing that they've told us so far actually seems to have happened the way they tell us it happened. So why would we expect that the slave trade went down the way they told us it went down either? It's really quite remarkable, some of the research that he's done. It's very refreshing to see this coming from a black man in the United States. Great work that he's done. So I will put a link to his channel and a video that he did on the American slave trade in the link below if you're watching this on YouTube. Now, all the world is staged, ladies and gentlemen. I've said it so many times. And much of the independent media and so-called truth community is a stage as well, I think. I mean, there's a lot of good people out there. There's a lot of people that are attempting to make a difference, but there's a lot of infiltration as well. I mean, there's a lot of people just out there yelling out that the sky is falling and spreading fear, fear, fear every day. A lot of people are tending to spread distrust, you know, contrarians out there to just plant that seed of doubt in people's minds. And really, you know, with all the information that you look at, all the information you look at on YouTube and everything that you come across, everything that I say, everything that everybody says, you've got to understand that what we're looking at is people's perspective based on the information they've had and the opinion that they've formed from looking at that information. You know, everything that I bring you on the shows is my perspective on that which I have had access to and my analysis of that data. That's the same as everybody. Anybody who says they know the truth and that they have got the answer and that they are the way and the light, these people are leading you astray. What they're offering you is their perspective. That's all anybody has to offer. That's all anybody ever will have to offer. And as far as what this reality is, what this realm we live in could be, what this system of control is really leading to, all we can do is speculate, because we are not free enough to know any of that information. And what this is really all about is attempting to establish that freedom, because that freedom exists within the hearts and minds of the people, which is why this is a spiritual battle more than anything else. Now, it's like I said, people are in a trance. They're just walking around in a daze and they don't know what to do. They're caught on the treadmill. They're just walking and running and collecting this paper and trying to find some form of security and some form of peace somewhere. And they sometimes realize the system is corrupt, the system is what it is, but they don't know how to get out of it because they don't realize the answer is in themselves. And people are scared to unite with the people around them. They're scared to ever really show the true self that they are. You know, the women that we've got in the world today that are so brutalized by this system, told they have to look beautiful, told they have to be this and do that and enhance their bodies with all sorts of things that they really don't need, rather than just living the experience and being themselves and being the beautiful experience and the beautiful soul of creation that they are. And it's the same with the men. The men are told they have to be all this stuff and do all these things and have all these responsibilities and make all this money and be the breadwinner and be this and be that. Nobody can actually live their lives because they're too caught up in all this stuff that they're told they have to do, that they are judged by if they don't do. Now, what would you do if you didn't have to work and collect this paper to be alive? What would you be able to create? Think of the things you could do. Think of the things we could build if we weren't so busy doing all of this stuff, running around like little rats in a maze, collecting all this paper and doing all this stuff that we think is important when it isn't. None of it is important. You know, we look at this and we think, well, we're in a bad situation. President Trump's going to come along and fix us, or some politicians are going to fix us, some new government, some this, some that is going to come and fix the problem. Really, the problem is in ourselves. You know, it's in ourselves, and it's in our need to attack everybody around us and question everybody around us and attack everybody for even having an opinion or a perspective. And like I say, micro-analyze every sentence everybody says and look for something that may be out of sync with your line of thinking, and then throw it back at them and cast as much distrust of these people as you can, simply because you disagree with some opinion they had on something, which may have even been a comment in passing. Now, I've had people, when I did a show recently when I mentioned the shooting in Pittsburgh, I mentioned how the shooting was being used, and because I didn't talk about the victims and I didn't say whether I thought there were victims or whether I thought there weren't victims, someone actually literally accused me of promoting the Pittsburgh shooting as being a real event and that I must be a government agent. I didn't even look at the event, folks. I just assumed that it's a staged event and it's going to be used in a certain way. And as I said, that's the way I look at these events. I don't care whether they're victims or not. I don't care whether they're crisis actors or not. It doesn't affect me. What affects me is the legislation that's going to come from the event, how the event is going to be used on the world stage and how it is going to affect the people. I just assume it's staged, whether they use victims or not. Doesn't matter to me. Doesn't make a lick of difference. It's how the event's going to be used. These are details that I can't prove. I don't even have an opinion on because I wasn't there. That's the way it goes, folks. And that's just the way I look at these things. But that's the sort of attacks that you get simply for doing this work. And if you're someone out there who's going to become an activist, and you're someone out there who has got a new YouTube channel, or you're someone out there who's making clips, or you're speaking out and you're attempting to make a difference, beware of how much flack you're going to get from the people that you're attempting to help during the process. And the more people you reach, the louder your voice becomes, the more people who resonate with your message and who hear your message, and the more your voice spreads, the more you are going to get hacked down, the more you are going to get attacked, the more every single word you say will be micro-analyzed and thrown back at you, and the more they will attempt to silence you. Because the so-called independent media, the so-called truth community, is so self-absorbed and so programmed in its thinking, for the most part, that they absolutely believe that anybody who is making a difference must be controlled opposition. Anybody who gets big, they say, they like to use that word big, because if you've got a lot of subscribers or a lot of people listening to what you're saying, then you must be big, therefore you must be a celebrity, therefore you must be controlled opposition. This is the way they go. You start off with a small channel, just saying a few things, but if you say something good, if you say something important, it will resonate with people, and a lot of people will listen to you, and as soon as a lot of people are listening to you, you'll get accused of being controlled opposition, because that's the programming that people are subject to. People believe that all opposition must be controlled, because one of these people wrote that down one time. They said, hey, we will lead all opposition against us. And that's all it took. They just had to make that statement, and that program suddenly got put in everybody's minds so that they will follow the underdog until the underdog begins to make a difference, and then they will accuse him of being the enemy and attempt to silence him. And people will do this to stop their own resistance and drive a wedge in their own resistance. It's their own programming, and they will do what they can to make a difference, and as soon as they are making a difference, they'll find fault with it and attempt to hack it down. You know, we are destroying our own resistance with our own infighting. And that's the way it's been, and that's the program that people are running. And if people could just step back and see that, it would make a huge difference to everything, folks. I mean, I've been saying on these radio shows for 10 years now, agree to disagree. Allow people to have different opinions. If you've got a belief system, that's fine, but don't enforce your belief system on others, and don't think that anyone who does not comply with your belief system is automatically the enemy, because that is a program and it's completely counterproductive, and it's one of the things that's used against us. Divide and conquer is the motto, folks, and it is used against us every day, every moment of every day, in almost every aspect of our lives. And it's extremely important that people see this and they see just how much they are being played. Now, we're at a time here, folks. We're at a time where we could really establish freedom. So much information is coming out. You know, so many possibilities are there now. And you've got so many people now looking into ancient history. So many people are confirming that this lost culture was there and that it was a recent culture. Sure, it may have gone back thousands of years, like I said, but it came up to quite recently. It still was here quite recently. It wasn't destroyed thousands of years ago, and we didn't build up through the Roman Empire, through the Dark Ages and all the stuff that we're fed. It just doesn't make sense. None of that story makes sense. I mean, they can make it make sense if they leave lots of stuff out, but we all know how much stuff the Smithsonian Institute has dumped off the coast. We know how many artifacts are hidden. We know how many places we're not allowed to go. We know all sorts of things are hidden from us. So why aren't we ever able to look at the chamber beneath the Sphinx? Oh, we know it's there, but we can't open it to the public because of this, because of that. Why not? It's all us. We're just people here. Who gives you the right to control the flow of knowledge? Who gives the Vatican the right to secret all that information and control the flow of knowledge? Who gives anybody the right to do anything that they're doing, folks? And, you know, we sit here on the outside and we try to microanalyze anything, but we really don't have a clue. You know, what we've got to do is realize that we don't have a clue and realize that we've been lied to on every single count that you can think of. Just about everything, folks. Just about everything is a crock. It really is. Everything we've been told about this system, everything we've been told about this political stuff, everything about these wars, the reason for these wars, everything. All of it is manufactured. All of it is an illusion. This is the Matrix itself. It's the belief that people have on what this world is and how the world is run around them. And the whole thing is a charade. All the world is a stage, ladies and gentlemen, and we have really been played on so many levels. And like I say, this is an important time because right now people are seeing it. There's so many people questioning things now. There's so many people questioning history now. At least people are prepared to question history. And even if I've made a lot of mistakes with what I've said about history, it doesn't matter. It's the fact that I'm asking the questions. That's the whole thing. That's the what's wrong with the world. That's what makes the Matrix so easy to perpetuate, the fact that people don't ask questions anymore. People just comply. They just believe what they're told. They just take it all at face value, and they go with the flow. But why? Why not ask questions? Why not look at things from your own eyes, and look at them physically and ask the questions and see what makes sense to yourself rather than simply going for whatever you're told happened, rather than simply going for what you're told to believe. Look at what things are telling you themselves and form your own opinions. You know, we have an incredible potential. The human mind is absolutely amazing. And if we were left to our own devices, if we didn't have to work all the time and do all this stuff, imagine what we could create. Really, folks, it's through the roof, the potential that we have with this species. And with all of the construct and all of the matrix and all of the control that we're under, I think even through it all, even through all the fluoride and the food toxins and the television and everything they've done to keep us down, we're waking up anyway. You know, and more people are waking up. And that's a good sign. That's got to be very encouraging for everybody. In fact, that is why they are going to such an effort to lock things down, simply because people are waking up to such an incredible degree. And to me, well, that's a very positive thing. Even with all the infighting and all the accusations and all the stuff that happens, it's still a very positive thing. But like I was saying, folks, if you are a new activist, if you are a new creator on YouTube, if you are someone who's just developing your voice and you are speaking out, just remember that you're going to have pretty thick skin to do this work, and just be prepared for the amount of flack that you get, because the louder your voice becomes, the more people are going to attempt to silence you. But just stay true to your heart. Stay true to your heart and always maintain your focus on the bigger picture, and I'm sure you'll be fine. Well, that's what works for me anyway. No stake in the outcome, ladies and gentlemen. It's all about the journey and what you do with it. And hey, what if you actually do make a difference? What if you actually manage to reach thousands or millions of people? And what if we actually do manage to obtain freedom? And what if we get to become what we should be once again? When you really consider that, well, it's worth the effort. Well, here we are at that time again, ladies and gentlemen, where we are getting very close to the end of the show. Again, a bit of an esoteric show for you today. Sorry about that. I just kind of cover these topics and don't really know where I'm going until I go there. So that's just the way it works. And it's really difficult to keep focus on where I start sometimes because there's kind of so much stuff rattling around in the head. Thank you to the many people who send me so many emails. And look, again, I'm so sorry that I don't get a chance to answer all of the emails that I get. You know, if they arrive, if I don't answer them straight away, very often they just get buried in the pile. And even if I think of them later and decide, gee, I'd really like to answer that email that whoever it was sent me, I have to try to find them. And sometimes I just can't find them because I get so many. And it's just this workload that I have, folks. And for the people that are asking me as well to be doing live streams, I've had a lot of requests for live streams. I've had a lot of requests to do more videos than I do as well, and to do more radio shows than I do. And, folks, it's kind of difficult to put together a one-hour video every week and release it. I mean, there's a lot of effort and a lot of work goes into editing and into creating the videos to go with the radio shows to put them on YouTube. And the Crow House is a one-man effort. It's a one-man show. So it's just difficult for me to find the time. I mean, I've got a huge library now of clips and things that I've used because I've been making videos for 10 years. So I can throw a video together pretty quickly now. And I have a huge storehouse of images and graphics and stuff that I can recall and use to construct a video, but even with that, it is very time consuming putting together a 1 hour radio show, and even coming up with 1 hour's worth of information to bring you every week, sometimes it can get a little bit difficult. And that's why the shows are so free flow. I don't really have any real structure, and why I tend to cover so many topics and go off on so many tangents, because if I tried to prepare it, if I actually tried to create an essay or a topic to bring you every week, it would be so time consuming that I wouldn't even have time to get the videos edited together. And for those who've paid any attention at all, you've probably noticed that the website has kind of really been put on the back burner. The website hardly even gets updated anymore because I'm spending so much time on video editing, on answering emails, and attempting to just keep things flowing the way they are. So please do bear with me on all that. It's very difficult to answer so many emails. It's very difficult to even answer so many comments. I mean, I try to comment, and when people send me links, I try to look at the videos. I try to leave comments on videos. I mean, I do try to participate in the community out there. But it's interesting, you know, because even when I do that, I get accused of not being me because, of course, Max Egan, the real Max Egan, could not have time to comment on videos. It's weird, folks. You put out videos on YouTube and you get a bunch of subscribers and suddenly people think that you're something that you're not, that you're not a real person, that you don't have time to do normal things, and they think that there's a whole team behind you and that if you're out there commenting on videos, it can't be you that's doing it. It's a very, very strange thing. I actually got accused of not being me the other day simply because someone had sent me a link to somebody's video and there'd been someone there making a false accusation against me because they'd microanalyzed one sentence and taken it out of context and accused me of saying something I didn't say and having an opinion I didn't have. So I made a comment and they responded saying, well, of course, now you've proven you're a government agent because you could not be you because you could not possibly have time to comment on a video by somebody else. And that's what you're subject to for attempting to have any sort of a life in this community as well. It's a very strange situation to be in. But I do try to comment, folks. I do try to participate in the community out there. But then I have the videos and the radio shows and the website and all the other stuff that I am attempting to get done, plus all the activism and the speaking dates. But it's just a big workload for one person, and I find it difficult, so please do bear with me on all that. But again, thank you for all the kind words and the kind support you send me. I do read the comments. I try to read all the comments. Sometimes after a couple of weeks I don't, because some of them get completely overrun with comments, sometimes thousands upon thousands of comments, and it does get hard for me to go back and see them. And I don't get alerted to all of the comments either, folks. So sometimes if you reply to me on YouTube or whatever, YouTube doesn't always tell you when you get a comment or reply to a comment. I mean, it may give it to you sometimes, but you actually have to go to the videos and physically scroll through the comments yourself to see them, and I simply don't have the time to do it a lot of the time. But thank you for understanding, and thank you very much for bearing with me through all this. Again, I will be speaking in Acapulco in February in Mexico on February 14th to February 17th. I'm also doing a gig in Coffs Harbour in Australia called Illuminate, and I've gone through the dangers of titling talks that way before on previous shows, but well, that's what they called it and that's where I'm speaking, and that will be around about January 18th. I think you should find a banner for that on the website if I manage to get one up there. I did say that last week, but I still haven't managed to put one up there yet. I will try to get one up there this week, so there will be a banner to that event on my website, thecrowhouse.com. And I'll be doing another event, a smaller event in Byron Bay around about the same weekend as that in January. And as I said, the other event that I'll be doing will be Anacapulco in February. And that will be the only international event I'm doing in 2019. I really want to have some time off travel, get some effort and some work put back into my health and get some work done on the films and try to get back on track a little bit in that direction. So that's what I'm heading for next year. Thank you again to all my Patreon supporters. You are the only people who keep the show on the air, and I really cannot thank you people enough, but that is it for me, ladies and gentlemen. I'm now completely run out of time, so I'll look forward to speaking to you again next week. Please take very good care until then. In Lakesh.